We're very fortunate to have the director of the last EAO ATP program here to provide us with summary and concluding comments on today's activities. Stephanie?
Well, I'm truly honored to be able to do the wrap-up, and I have to say, today was just exceptional. I would like to say this was probably our comprehensive exam for the ATP. As ATP was beginning to phase down, we were concerned about leaving our legacy and ensuring that people would know how wonderful our evaluation program is. And you could hear today the passion when each of our experts got up to speak. And I think that passion is just, you saw it in the quality of the work and you saw it in the questions. So I have to give a heartfelt thanks to Richard and Susan for putting this workshop together, to all the TIP staff who are here to present their results and their expertise, and to our contractors who are really our extended family and part of the ATP evaluation efforts. We are indeed an internationally recognized evaluation program, and there's a reason for it. Today really represented the best qualities of what ATP was all about. When you think of ATP, you think of creativity, you think of collaboration, entrepreneurship, knowledge spillovers, all these good public finance and economic terms. And in fact, EAO was really this in action as well. We not only measured this for our projects, we lived it as well. And I think you could see that in these presentations today. I want to talk about, I know there's a rule of three, but I'm going to break that rule. And that's another thing that we would do often in the EAO is we would break rules because we're exploring new territory. So I have the rule of four. And I'm going to talk in our summary about the four of the best practices that I heard at a very high level, and then four recommendations that I have for going forward. When we talk about our best practices, I think that the thing that you might not have heard today is that all these presentations, when a product's finished, when we have a report that's done, or a status report that's written, this looks really easy, doesn't it? It's like, what's so hard about doing this work? So I want to convey that our best practice of having multiple approaches to doing this work was really evolutionary. And you heard some of that discussion today. So I want to correct maybe one conception about the fact that open-ended questions may be the only way to go. Open-ended questions on our surveys and in our interviews are an important part of what we do. But as our program began to grow, our surveys also had to be reshaped into having several closed-ended questions as well, because what would happen is you would have this massive data that still had to be coded or still had to be sorted through. So emphasizing this multiple approach that we have surveys with both closed-ended questions, open-ended questions, that we have interviews that do the same. You saw a lot of the themes throughout of all the approaches that we took, but you need, even within each approach, multiple facets of evaluation. The second really important part about this multiple approach is that, and I think Gene was really the only one that talked about this the most, but was also an underlying facet or underlying theme of all our work, and this was the measuring the counterfactual, or measuring what Gene called additionality, or that delta. So we were always exploring what difference did ATP make? And I think you were trying to get at that with your program as well. That was always like, if ATP had not existed, if we had not funded that project, what would have happened? And trying to, the counterfactual is such an important underlying theme, whether you're writing your GEM, whether you're writing a status report, whether you're conducting a benefit cost study, all of these methods go back to what difference did ATP make? So I'm only on the first best practice, but we'll only be here a few more minutes. I think a second really important theme in ATP was that we really did look at our whole portfolio of projects. We looked at our successful projects, our superstars, but we also looked at those projects that didn't succeed. And there's a quote that says that both success and failure are greatly overrated. But failure gives you a lot more to talk about. And I would have to add that in ATP, it actually probably gave us a whole lot more to learn from. So we learned from Lee and Stephanie and Prasad about looking at, well, Prasad looked at our successes, our superstars, but from Lee and Stephanie that we looked at also our failures and learned a tremendous amount from that as well. Our third best practice was that we were willing to try new methods. And we were also willing to accept that they might not all work. Very similar to projects that we funded in ATP, we knew that they weren't all going to work or that some would be more complicated. And so we were willing to undertake that, and we saw that with Connie's work, with Kathy's work. These are very complicated methods, and we had the luxury to be able to explore those, test them, try them out, and learn from them, and hopefully set a new platform for looking at other ways of evaluating our programs or our projects as well as our programs. So these are just a few of our best practices, but I would propose that we need to continue these best practices into the technology innovation program, as also provide food for thought for those of you who are here who have programs to evaluate as well. But of course, my job is also to say we need to look forward, and usually I'm the one to zero in on what we haven't done as opposed to all these wonderful things that we've accomplished. One of the hardest parts of evaluation is the feedback into the program design and operations and analysis. And Steve touched lightly on that when he talked about that we did process evaluation. And we do. About 2 years after we would run a competition, we would conduct a survey to evaluate, were we actually selecting high-risk projects? Were we looking at projects that met our mission? But I would actually argue that you even want to move back a step further and look at process evaluation. And this is something that I've learned while I'm on detail at the Science Technology Policy Institute and looking at what NIH and other agencies do. They actually really do evaluate their process, and they learn a lot. I think the benefit from that is people get more immediate feedback. They have a better understanding of what evaluation can do. Now, ultimately, measuring outcome is what it's all about, and that's what we want to do. But I think for beginning to lay that framework for evaluation, to have other people understand it, to have other staff understand what evaluation is, I think moving back as well to really truly evaluating your process would benefit the program more immediately as well as in the long run, lay that framework for understanding what the outcome evaluation is. Next recommendation would be to continue to use outside experts, and that's been evolutionary as well. We started, thanks to Richard, with having a wonderful relationship with the National Bureau of Economic Research, and that allowed us to lay a lot of the really important concepts that framed the program. Rosalie pointed out there were no models back in 1990, and because of our relationship with that and because of the work that Rosalie and Jean did, they actually laid those conceptual models, and working with these very famous economists from the National Bureau of Economic Research allowed us to really put public finance in action, and ATP is representative of being able to actually very practically measure many of these concepts. As the program became larger again, this has evolved where many of our contractors are now teams. So we heard from the Pricewaterhouse team, we heard from the WestJet team, we heard from the NORC team, where they are really extended staff who have helped us to really embrace what we were trying to measure, what we're trying to talk about when we talk about evaluation. And the beauty of using these outside experts is that when TIP or ATP staff are being pulled in all these different directions because we have a competition or we have project management, these teams are just, they steadily march forward. They continue to write the status reports until we have 200. They collect our data on a quarterly basis for us. They do some of the analysis. So that is that steady benefit of having our outside teams of contractors help us do our work. Two more recommendations, and I'll be brief. The next one is that we have a lot of research that we actually left on the shelf. If you look at our website, we produced an incredible volume of work, and you heard a lot of that today. But just as we used to say when we funded an ATP project and why we emphasized the commercialization so heavily is that if technology was not commercialized. The best technology left on the shelf wasn't going to help anyone. Well, we had a lot of studies because we had this level of perfection for getting them out that made it very difficult, that a lot of these studies didn't make it out. And so I would advocate that we really institutionalize a working paper series where we allow some of these early research to be presented, or research that we just really don't think will ever meet the quality of a final published report, but that would still be useful to researchers, and that we more formally institutionalize a working paper series to allow a lot of that other research to be at least available to researchers, even if not in officially published format. And finally, my fourth recommendation is that we use the ATP and TIP data more fully. So the data enclave is a giant step in that direction, and actually has been one of my dreams since I first came to the ATP, is that we would essentially allow this unique source of data on innovation and entrepreneurship to be available to external researchers. But that equally translates, it's a giant spillover, a boomerang effect back into our program as well. Two of the overarching characteristics of this data enclave are it encourages documentation and it encourages collaboration. Well, just the fact that of putting our data into the data enclave, we had to use the very systematic approach to data documentation, the DDI that Tim Mulcahy talked about, that's already greatly benefited us because we had to document our data in a very systematic way that was common across surveys. Up until that point, I think the documentation for our surveys, one was on an Excel spreadsheet, one was, you know, in a code book, and we had these, it forced us to document our surveys cohesively. But then the whole collaboratory approach of the data enclave, and the fact that we now have a new model for inviting expert review in. It's not quite as controlled as maybe we did when we did individual contracts, but exploring and allowing researchers at a variety of universities to have access to this data who will use our data in new and creative ways, which should feed back to inform our program as well as the innovation area more broadly. So these are just a few thoughts about the future of evaluation, not only in TIP, but in your program as well. ATP has left just a gigantic legacy in the evaluation world, and we are more than happy to have shared this with you, and we look forward to coming back in a year or two and hearing how you have implemented all these wonderful tools into your programs. So I just want to end with one quote from Winston Churchill, going back to the Brits. I'm sure you've all been watching John Adams this week on the HBO. But Churchill says that true genius resides in the capacity for evaluation of uncertain and conflicting information. And so as he noted and we saw today, evaluation is not an easy task. And the lessons that we learned from the ATP demonstrate the true genius of its creators and its implementers. So thank you all very much.